Cool. You want me to just jump right in? I realize I say that all the time. I'm like, let's jump right in. And I didn't mean for that to be a thing, but it's cute because, like, jumps and figure skating. Anyway.
Let's quadruple Lutz right in.
Yeah. Let's waltz right in. Okay, how does this start? Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm super awesome. How are you, Netta?
I'm doing fine. This is off to a great start.
Yeah, I don't know why I said super awesome. That's just patently not true. I'm it at best, but you know, I'm excited to be here and talking about some skating.
Yeah, likewise. I feel like we continue this trend of just kind of... We're not procrastinating per se on our coverage, but we are taking our sweet time as if we know it's gonna be all over so soon.
Yeah, I think it's part that and part that I know my brain has just been reduced to like a soup that like just of like just depression and boredom, and like getting things done is like not on the menu. Am I right, ladies?
But anyway, we are here. We are talking. We are finishing up our coverage of the 2021 U.S. Nationals. But first, we have some random bits and pieces that deserve attention.
Breaking news. News.
Those are cold news.
News. Nouveau in the French. So wow. I guess, well, speaking of French-speaking places, we could start there.
Yeah. We don't really do this. We don't really cover Ice Dance a lot, but we kind of talked about like the whole like Coach Tom Z controversy last time with Brady and all. But a part of that we didn't mention was that Christina Carrera and Anthony Ponomarenko, they were asked to withdraw because of, you know, either being sick or being exposed to COVID. Like, that was like a whole thing.
Were they asked? I thought that they did it on purpose.
There's controversy about it. There's a whole thing on the wiki of Nationals which says controversy. I'm not here to spread any like conspiracy theories. What I am here to tell you is that shortly after that, they announced that they were switching coaches, which was like, oh, surprise, like this is new, what's up? And then they announced that they are moving to London, Ontario, which is where the Ice Academy of Montreal's new campus is, which is where Scott Moir is starting his coaching, I guess, officially his coaching career in, like, the big international circuit. Which, I guess, makes a lot... Like, if I were an ice dancer and I was like, I'm gonna leave everything and move elsewhere, it would be to train with Scott Moir, you know?
Yeah, can I say something? This has massive center stage Jody turning down her spot, spoilers, at the American Ballet Company in order to go be the star of Cooper Nielsen's new company vibes.
Yeah, it's very dramatic. It's a big plot twist of the season. I wonder, I'm not going to talk about off season. I was like, I wonder if we're going to start seeing more like interesting shifts as we always do in spring and summer. But it's still February and I have no interest in looking that far ahead in the future.
Yeah, it's just exhausting. But that was a fun bit of news. You know, because we don't necessarily cover the sport, but we like the drama and the gossip.
Oh, yeah.
And so in that respect, it was very much up our alley.
I like everything about Ice Dance except how little I understand it.
Yeah, like
from a technical point
of view. I love it. I just don't know how to talk about it in any sort of way, yeah. Which is why we don't. But what we do know how to talk about is Keegan Messing, who we love and is expecting a baby with his wife Lane. They announced it recently on Instagram, and the way he did it was he put up a post of skates with baby skates in between the big skates, and I cried.
It's very cute. I woke up to Megan having DM'd me this post, and it was like the first thing I saw in the morning, and it got me out of bed. Just the knowledge that love is real and people are out there being very happy with each other is very moving.
I came very close to texting you, wake up, Keegan's having a baby, but historically, whenever I text you, wake up, you always somehow know and do wake up. And I was like, nah, this is something they can wake up to on their own time.
Yeah,
you always know.
I'm an extremely light sleeper, so if something is happening, I will feel it and I will know. This is not about me. This is about Lane and Keegan and their beautiful child who's coming in the summer. I'm thrilled. It feels like they deserve all the good things in the world.
I know, and that baby's gonna be like so cute and happy. I bet it's gonna be so good at skating. I was thinking like... Don't put a baby on ice skates. But then I was like, I bet Keegan's baby would come out really good at skating. Because you know how sometimes babies can swim? Like, actually always. Oh, yeah. It's like a science thing.
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple of children at my rank who like, a couple of toddlers who like, they can't walk. Like, you know, like when toddlers can kind of like walk, but they look like little penguins and it's kind, yeah. It kind of looks unstable. There is like three of them at my rank and all of them can skate.
My theory on that would be that walking probably feels so unstable and scary that skating isn't any worse.
Yeah, probably. But it's also like the kind of thing of like tiny children also like learn languages faster and stuff because they don't know anything else. Like, their only thing is
learning. Everything's
like
new.
Learning, like finding out like new things, and they're not afraid. Also, they're so close to the ground.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say too. And their bones are like made of jelly. It's, yeah, they don't know that though.
Yeah, speaking of babies, we have to mention McBrigina and Danielle Montalbano's adorable daughter Naya just turned one.
Where does the time go?
She was just a newborn. But yeah, she's 1 year old and she's extremely cute. And they posted pictures from her like little birthday party. It was very precious.
Aww. I don't know if this counts as a baby, but Karina Monta's book baby is also has some exciting updates. So if you didn't know, Karina Monta, who is with Joe Johnson, a former ice dancer for the US, and they retired to join the circus. And then after the pandemic hit, now they're on Dancing on Ice. And I haven't been watching it, but it is my understanding through following from Instagram that Karina and her partner were recently eliminated, but Joe was recently called in as an alternate or something. So as a team, they're still kind of in the running. But anyway, Karina was announced a while back that she was writing like a YA memoir of her time as like a queer teenage girl in this hyper feminine sport. And it, you know, they released the title and the cover, and it's this beautiful image of her in like a crop top on her skates, and it's called On Top of Glass, which is a very cool title.
Yeah, I'm extremely hyped to read this book.
Me too.
I know it's gonna make me emotional. The design of the cover is awesome. I know that this is also exciting because I know that there is a corner of teenagers who like to go to bookstores and look through like the YA and autobiographies and biographies and just look for cool covers and look for queer narratives. So I feel like this is going to be someone's into like the world of figure skating as well, which is wild to consider and also very exciting.
Yeah, it's such a cool time to be like a queer woman in figure skating if you're looking for role models. Because you have Karina, you have Amber, you have like, I mean, that's two more than usual.
Yeah, that's two more than usual, and hopefully that
hopefully it expands.
And hopefully that inspires whatever comes next.
Whatever comes next.
Whatever comes next. I don't know. I'm very excited, and everyone has been sharing this book cover and being excited about it, which is awesome to see. It's out in October, and I'm sure we're going to have a book club about it.
Oh, that would be fun.
We should. Are there any more news? Quickly, news. Russia is up to some bullshit.
Yeah, that's it. We just like, I mean, as fun as the team event looked, we're not gonna cover it for the same reason we didn't cover the last Russian things, because they didn't handle the pandemic good. And also, every time I have to look at Alexei Gudin's homophobic face, I get nauseous.
It's just like they're not even pretending at this point. Like during the Rostelecom, there was some pretense of like mask wearing and distancing. And I was just like, let's gather 40 of our top athletes and have them hug for a group selfie. And it's like, why are you doing this? I mean, we know why. It's populism and it's fine. We're just not going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's like equal parts for me, like political, moral, ethical. Like, I have a platform and I get to choose what I talk about on it. And the other 50% is that, like, it literally makes me so, it's upsetting to watch, like, something that you're like, this is actively dangerous. And I don't, and a lot of these people are not, like, are known not great people. At a certain point, I'm like, I need to not subject myself to that. So that's why we're not going to cover that. But also, like, if you did watch, like, obviously no judgment, we hope you had a good time.
Yeah, you're not, it's not a moral failing on your end to have seen the children skate.
Yeah, like, sometimes we all need to watch that. Like, it just depends on what you need.
Yeah. It was funny because America's big game, capital B, capital G, happened like very recently, and it was a sanctioned super spreader event, and people on Twitter were like very mad about it. They were like, oh my god, I can't believe people are allowed to like do this for the sake of sports, like, what up? And I'm like, oh my god, I'm so happy you can join us. We've been asking those questions for months.
Yeah, I actually had a similar thought about that. Like, I don't really follow football and I didn't watch the big game or anything, but I followed Twitter. And
I follow Twitter
on Twitter. No, I saw this, I saw the discourse about, you know, is it safe? And not only that, but like, of course, the NFL is a shit show in and of itself with like whatever athlete's political views versus that athlete's political views versus how we treat Colin Kaepernick versus other people. And it was just interesting because sometimes I feel like such a wet blanket for being like, oh, I don't like this person's politics, or I don't like the way this competition handled themselves in skating. But then you see it on such a popular sport like football, and it's like sort of vindicating in a way to be like, okay, these are conversations we're allowed to have about sports.
I also think those are conversations about sports that are worth having and that matter outside of sports and outside of like whatever entertainment people have access to. And it's way more interesting and important than like, oh my god, is some game happening? I don't know, I've never followed a sport. Like, it's not quirky when you pretend to not know when something huge is happening. It's just boring.
Oh, I hate that too. And I'm really glad that the general discourse seems to also have turned towards like, it's not actually funny. Not even from a like, let people enjoy things point of view, which is like, you can have your opinions on that or whatever, but just because it's just not funny anymore. Like, I saw a tweet that was like, can we retire Superb Owl? It's like up there with sports ball in terms of like, it's, you're not.
It's not quirky. It's not funny. There is a very good College Humor sketch about the person who doesn't like sports and will let you know. I don't know the name of the sketch, but Mike Trapp's in it. He plays the person who doesn't like sports. It's very good. Go look it up after this. But first, we're going to do some comedy. Yeah. How's that for a transition?
Most people like a sport. If you're here, you like a sport at the very least. So we're going to talk about it for you. That's right. We are recommencing our coverage of U.S. Nationals, and we're talking about the men's event, or the boys event if you want to hate us.
Oh my god, it's boys. I'm so excited to be talking about boys. Some exciting shit happened with the men.
It was pretty wild. Not in exactly the same way that the women's event was, but it wasn't, you know, totally predictable. So we're going to talk about the podium first, and then we're going to go into honorable mentions, other people we want to talk about.
All right. In pewter, in fourth place, we have Yaroslav Paniot, whom I have no choice but to stand because he's Slavic. He's from the Ukraine. So I immediately respect him endlessly.
I don't remember if I was ever on record saying this last year because, like, my whole experience going to Nationals last year was such a whirlwind, but I distinctly remember watching Yaroslav skate last year and thinking, this kid is so good. Like, he was, you know, at the time, you know, not someone I had heard of because he had, I believe, just switched to skating for America and was kind of new to seniors, and not somebody that was in, like, any of the, like, big boy later warm-up groups. And I just remember watching him and being like, he's got a quality of movement that is outclassing everyone else in this warm-up group. But he didn't have the jumps at the time. And so it was both a surprise and not a surprise this year because it did sneak up on me. I did kind of forget about him, and that's, you know, slap on my wrist. But it made sense to me because I was like, yeah, he got the jumps. And he had everything else already. Absolutely. So it was, like, well-deserved.
It is worth noting that he did very much. He is an Olympian already just because he represented the Ukraine at the last Winter Olympics. However, I think he has grown so much since we saw him last year. And it's always so exciting when, to borrow a phrase from the British commentators, when a cat gets put amongst the pigeons, when there's someone that you don't really expect to, you know, be making them waves. He was third in the free skate.
He was. And in the short, he was fourth. So he was, like, very consistently up there. And, like, he wasn't perfect, especially in the short, but he was throwing down these, like, big boy elements, like quad flip, triple toe. And so regardless of, like, the execution, it was like, okay, he means business. Because, I mean, you know, obviously, we'll talk about Jason in a minute, but, like, having a quad is not even, like, guaranteed among the top, top, top guys. So, and that's easy to forget in a field where a lot of the talk is about Nathan and Vincent. But, yeah, his free skate, Elvis, my gosh.
See, the thing is, I'm buying everything this child is selling.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of vibes and energy, I just don't know if anyone should be skating to Elvis. Like, in general?
Yeah, I think it's so hard because in a sport where there's so many questionable music choices that are just not really thought through from the point of view of, like, history or whatever. Yeah, but also, like, not the worst I've seen, unfortunately. I just didn't think it was, like, okay, for me, like, casting aside, like, who was Elvis as a person and what did he represent and whatever. Because, like, fuck if I knew that when I was Yaroslav's age either.
Yeah, you're right.
I think that as a piece of, like, American folklore, Elvis is so larger than life in terms of, like, image and in terms of, like, everybody has associations with him. Everybody has some sort of image of, like, a cheesy Elvis impersonator or, like, what the cheesy costume would be or the hip movements. It's almost like in grad school we would talk about, like, when choosing music for a theater piece, you have to think about what baggage it comes with. Like, what are people bringing into it? And Elvis is one of the most, like, heavily baggaged artists that you could pick in America, I think. So I was really surprised by that. But, oh my God, was it fun. It was so fun. It was so, like, this kid is the star of, like, the regional high school theater Bye Bye Birdie. And, like, goddamn, did he earn the role.
Yeah, he, like, gets nominated for, is it a Jimmy? The, like, school theater, like, the youth theater awards.
Yeah, or, like, the local arts council, and everyone's like, please vote on my Instagram.
Whoever gets the most likes wins, but you have to like the actual post, don't just like me resharing it.
In Rhode Island, it's the Motif Awards, but that's like highly specific to us.
Have you ever won a Motif Award?
No, I think I've maybe been in shows that were nominated for other stuff, but I don't think I've ever been nominated. I didn't do that much regional theater, to be honest.
I've never technically done regional theater. You know what I have done? And I have to bring it up because this is the only chance I'll ever get.
Brag away. It's your show.
Oh my God. Welcome to therapy. There's a Bulgarian musician who is an Elvis impersonator. His name is Tetsu Elvisa, which translates to Tetsu the Elvis.
I'm sorry, can you... I'm hearing Titso, is that...
No, it's Tetsu with two ts.
Okay, because Titso sounds like a busty clown.
God, I wish. No, but this...
What is Elvis but a busty clown, really?
Elvis is nothing but a true busty clown and a colonizer and many horrible things. But so there's this Bulgarian artist from kind of the turn, like 20 years ago, he was, I hesitate to say big, but he was infamous / famous for being an Elvis impersonator. He has a video clip, a music video, if you will, in which he is being Elvis in a gym with cheerleaders around him. And I guess you can figure out where this is going. It was my team. My cheerleading team was in a music video with an Elvis impersonator in, like, 2005, and it's still very much on the internet. But you mentioned cheesy Elvis impersonators, and I just had to bring it up.
You know, anyone else, I would be like, how did it take so long into our friendship for this to come up? But with you, I'm like, no, that's fine. I've heard about the weirder stuff first, so it just anything, and I'm not surprised anymore by, like, the things on your resume.
I've been in a lunch meat commercial. I've done a lot. I've done a lot of
I liked
weird
your
shit.
Whiskey commercial you were in where everybody was like clapping and partying.
Yeah, that was a friend filmed that and they were like, do you want to come to this bar and be an extra in our whiskey commercial? And I was like, fuck yeah. This is not about me. This is about Yaroslav Paniad.
This is actually just an annotated read aloud of Neda's resume. No, this is about Yaroslav, a different Slav with a different impressive resume because he now has a pewter medal.
At Nationals, which is more than I can say. But yeah, I'm extremely excited. My one wish for him for next season, assuming next season happens just fine, is two new programs. And I'm sure we'll get that because, you know, Olympic year, blah, 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 blah. But I just can't live another season with a Bublé and a Nelvis. I think it's just too much.
It's almost redundant, too, because, like, I know that technically Bublé's style is not Elvis's style, but it's adjacent enough that it feels redundant. He will almost definitely have a new short because he did the Michael Bublé last year, too.
I'm looking at his program summaries from, like, past years, and he tends to keep... He had the same short program for 3 years. So I'm like, please don't do that again. The Olympic year and his growing spot in the spotlight deserve better than fucking Michael Bublé.
Yeah, I guess before we move on, I do want to say that I think it's really cool to... I mean, we talk a lot about, and we see a lot, the pattern of moving from a really large, really competitive Fed to somewhere small where you're pretty much guaranteed an Olympic spot. And this kid kind of went backwards. And I'm sure he had plenty of reasons. I mean... You know, I don't know him personally and can't speak to exactly what they are, but I'm sure there were advantages to coming to train here and compete for the U.S., but it's still daunting, I think, to go from, like, I was skating for a small Fed and I went to the Olympics to I am now competing against Nathan Chen and Jason Brown.
Yeah, for sure. I think that speaks a lot to, like, his personal ambition and the trust he has in himself and his training, because... Realistically, if he were still representing the Ukraine, he would just be training to go to the Olympics. I'm not talking down at other Ukrainian figure skaters because I don't know them. But as a teist, like, we don't know them even in, like, just the European circuit. I can't think of many extremely good Ukrainian skaters. So it's kind of brave and ballsy to be like, I'm going to move to this big, strong Fed and essentially forfeit a guaranteed Olympic spot.
It's like Ivan Shmuratko, I think, is like the only other one that I can think of.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He is Ukrainian. Good for them.
Good for them.
We'll see. Well, that might mean that fucking Shmuratko gets an Olympic spot. I don't know how many Olympic spots the Ukraine has.
Let's say 12, just because who knows?
Let's talk about Jason Brown, please, Jesus Christ.
Please, God, can we please talk about Jason Brown? The only man in the whole world.
The inventor of figure skating.
He invented figure skating, and he continues to reinvent figure skating. Every time he comes out with some programs that are like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And then the next year, he's like, wait a minute, watch this. And it's even better. How does he do it?
It's incredible. The absolute grasp he has on his style and his way of moving through a program is just, it's artful at a level that we rarely see in any mode of performance. And it makes me deeply emotional. And this goes beyond just like stanning Jason, which we know I do. I think it's just so impressive to be seeing an athlete and an artist who, like, understands what he's good at as well as he does.
Yeah, I just so hope that he does in the next, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, et cetera, years go down in history as, like, one of the best in the sport of all time.
He must.
He simply must.
He's changing the way people look at men's singles freestyle choreography and movement. Let's talk about his short program.
Let's talk about it. And we, you know, we were very much in the weeks and months leading up to it, like, oh my God, Jason's gonna land the quad, Jason's gonna land the quad. He didn't do the quad at all in the short, which I think was really smart because, you know, short program points are valuable.
Yeah. Short didn't need it. His short this year is Centerman, choreographed by Roheen, and it's incredible. There is not a fucking single beat in that entire program that's empty. And I'm not saying it's busy, I'm just saying it's so well-crafted and smart.
It's like exactly what you want a figure skating program to be, but you're like, but it can't realistically be done. It would require too much stamina. It would require too much showmanship. Like, it, you know, realistically no one could do that, but of course he's doing it.
Correct. Exactly. I know since practices, when people could, you know, log on Peacock and watch practice, everyone was kind of abuzz about the fact that he fully has a choreo sequence in his short program.
He does!
Which I'm enamored. I think it's brilliant. I think it's so fun. It's just the lightness with which he does just completely impossible things for 2.5-3 minutes blows my mind.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about because it's so transcendent, and I really think that we just need to, you know, go watch it. Go watch it if you haven't. He lost points over something really nitpicky in the step sequence that was otherwise so above and beyond. And it's not fair, but the scoring is always going to be infuriating. It's just a thing in this
I just want to ask Judge Number 3, who I'm sure is a lovely person. I'm not going to, like, open the protocols and figure out who they are because that would be mean. I just want to ask, in what world do you watch Jason Brown's short program 2021 and be like, skating skills 9, I guess.
Judge 3 was lowballing Jason left and right.
Yeah, just across the board. I have many questions.
Many questions.
Judge 3, if you'd like to come on the show and defend yourself, let me know.
My main question is just, Jason Brown, how dare you? How dare you continue to be so entertaining and special? And even his free skate is, it's, what is it, like a deep Gershwin cut or something?
It's a deep Richard Rodgers cut. How dare you? Oh,
I'm so sorry. It's been a second since I was a musical theater student.
It's Slaughter on 10th Avenue, which is technically a ballet within a musical. It's from On Your Toes, which is Rodgers and Hart. And it's like this diegetic ballet which happens in the show. So it's a very deep Rodgers cut, which I respect.
When I hear the name Rodgers and Hart, I see it in my head in your handwriting because I stole all your notes from that class where we learned musical theater history and memorized all of your notes in like 10 minutes before the exam and then did fine and then forgot it all. I mean, I say stole, you gave them to me because you were gracious.
I enjoy taking notes on musical theater history and I'm willing to share them with everyone. But yeah, this is a deep cut. A deep Rodgers and Hart cut. I'm not going to pretend I know On Your Toes as well as I know other pieces of musical theater. But I can respect someone who's like, oh, y'all want music. Because one of the younger gentlemen did fucking Waving Through a Window, Dear Evan Hansen, whatever. And then you have Jason who's like, no, you know what? If we're doing musical theater, we're going to the 30s. We're doing Rodgers and Hart.
He did very much also literally do Waving Through a Window like a couple years ago.
Yeah, but he did. But it was an exhibition. It doesn't count. He did also do fucking Room Where It Happens. I'm not saying Grease. He's perfect. I'm also not saying that mainstream musical theater is not good. I mostly enjoy.
What I will say about this is, in the same way that, gosh, you know, our theater shit is really jumping out today. In the same way that, like, if you were going to do a song from an obscure 100-year-old musical at a recital or for an audition, I would say, like, good Lord, will you have to be memorable, because they're not going to know it. And so they're going to forget it unless you really knock it out the park. Likewise with Jason, like, the audience is not on your side automatically. They would be if you did, like, Les Mis or something that everyone knows. But it's also kind of a flex to be like, no one knows this and I'm so good that I'm going to make it my own and now you're going to know it as my thing.
Yes, but also now I'm thinking about him skating to Les Mis and I want to see it.
Yeah, why hasn't that happened? It would have happened if it was, like, 1998.
Yeah, I don't know, like, what kind of Les Mis cut. You're the music cut person, and you know Les Mis very well. I'm not sure what sort of part I would cast him in a Les Mis. I just know I would like to see it.
Everyone. All Jason Brown production of Les Mis.
You know what? I would be extremely into that.
Les Jasonables.
Les Jasonables. What I will say is he mentioned...
Lovely Jason's waiting for your call.
I was going to do a horrible joke, but I'm not gonna. Instead, I will say that he said in a press conference or something that the plan is to keep his short for the Olympic year, which, thank fucking goodness.
That's an Olympic-ass program.
It is. It extremely is. And I'm not doubting that Roheen could technically top that if he wanted to. I just think he doesn't need to because it's perfect. But Jason also said that they're toying with the idea of going back to an old free skate.
Please do Schindler. And it for the
has to be Schindler. It has to be Schindler. And that would be a perfect fucking little package of Olympic programs. Because it's versatile and it's exciting and it's deeply memorable and it's going to make everyone cry and please.
I can really not think of a better pair of Olympic programs for any athlete than Centerman and Schindler for Jason. So, like, please, God of Skating, make it happen.
I'm excited.
Me too. Well, okay. Speaking of Olympic programs and the people who say that their own programs are Olympic worthy, let's move on to the silver medalist Vincent Joe.
My goodness.
Was that an unkind transition? I feel like...
No, it's not, because he's literally gone on record several times being like, everything I touch is Olympic worthy, which I respect. I wish I could go through life with that sort of confidence.
Yeah, me too. So Vincent came in second. He was in second in the short, and he was in second in the free, and he was in second overall. It was very consistent. And it was really kind of like what I expect from Vincent, which is like technically solid, technically impressive, technically reliable, and artistry that did, to its credit, try really hard.
I almost wish it didn't.
Mm.
I almost wish when you've given a bunch of money to Laurie Nicole and Misha Gay, I almost wish you would just let your choreo do what it has to do. And, you know, overall, I'm always like, oh my god, like, try to fucking act a little bit more. And I will bitch about it now, try to get everyone to be expressive and to perform for me. I almost feel like with the impeccable level of choreography, which we, I mean, I'm not mad at either one of those pieces, I don't think I need to be seeing your senior recital dramatic scenes monologue where you get to do a Tennessee Williams and you try very, very hard.
You know, it's funny. I know that all I talk about on this show is Dance Moms, but it reminds me of if you guys watched Dance Moms 10 years ago, which is when I watched
Dance Moms. You are entitled to compensation.
Yeah, you are entitled to compensation. No, but I, instead of working in college, I watched Dance Moms, and I remember that Maddie, who went on to have a good career, although I think is now wrapped up in, like, Sia cancellation gate, which is a shame.
She's been groomed by Sia for about 10 years at this point, and I hope
it's
for
really
her
a shame
that she can, like, leave and continue her career by herself, because she's so good.
Yeah, sidebar, watch the Breaking the Ice with Adam Rippon and Maddie and her sister, Mackenzie, and they were really good. They're yes. surprisingly good skaters, but maybe not surprising because they're very good dancers. But what I'm trying to say about the Dance Moms is that Maddie always got all this praise and accolades for the fact that she had a really expressive face, but her face was always the same face. And it was just like a way she had learned to arrange her facial features to look anguished. And it didn't read as like the product of a feeling. It just read as like something she'd learned to do with her face. And that's how I feel about Vincent. Like, he's got a face. He's got, you know, some gestures, and they don't read as organic or coming from a genuine place inside. They just read as something he learned how to do from the outside in.
Yeah. I almost wish, I agree with you, and I almost wish that he'll just let that go and just let the music and the choreo work for him. Because I'm sure, I mean, the man's a poet. I'm sure he is experiencing the emotion and the thought process. And I feel like someone along the way lied to him and told him that performance is this like outward thing you do. And he just needs to forget that, because I feel like then it's going to stop. And I know that cringe culture is dead, but it's cringy to me what he does, and I would like to see it end.
Something I've been thinking about for like a whole bunch of other reasons that speaks to that is that I think, yes, cringe culture is dead in the sense that I don't think that it's cringy or embarrassing for somebody to be like earnestly trying and doing something. I think where it crosses over the uncringy valley for me is TM, I'm patenting it. I think that where that place is for me is this thing we're talking about where you are, it's very like hat on a hat. If you are a writer, for example, you go in too hard on like, this is the moral of the story. Whereas like, if you just kind of hold it loosely in your heart while you write, it's gonna be in there regardless. I think that's what you're saying with Vincent. What I certainly would like to see is like, if he just kind of like holds these emotions in his heart while he skates, yeah, they'll come out, because he's like getting to be like a grown man who can like express things sensitively, like you've said, like with his poetry, it's not as much of a artifice.
Yeah.
And yet he still kind of wears it that way.
I just think no one told him that when you're older or you've done this slightly longer and you have the experience, you can just allow yourself to let that speak for itself and not be about, here's how hard I can perform sadness or introspection or, you know, whatever else.
But what I will say too is that given everything I've seen from him in interviews and like just sort of the way he talks, which like we dunk on him a little bit for, but like in general, he does seem to have that kind of like hustle and grind, try hard thing. Like, yes, we can dunk on him for it, but it's like a genuine way that like people go through life is that they're like, the harder I try, the better I'll do. Like, that's like a genuine thing. And I think part of growing up is maybe realizing like sometimes trying harder doesn't make it better. Sometimes it makes it worse. Sometimes you just have to chill out.
There is the whole thing of like working smarter, not harder, right? Which is the kind of aspiring young businessman platitude that we have seen from many an athlete. But I agree with it. I think if you just let your work speak for itself, whatever you're doing becomes a lot more genuine. But I think when you're like gunning for your second Olympics and you're a big grown man, it's a little bit too late to use that as an excuse to be like, oh, but he's young and he doesn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's 20, which isn't figure skating young, but it is young. Sorry, I got really distracted in the middle of that laughing and trying really hard not to laugh on mic because there is a line in this man's Wikipedia biography under personal life. And it says, when Joe was a baby, his family moved to Palo Alto, California, where they continue to reside. Now, you tell me what that sounds like, because to me that sounds like they left him wherever they were and just moved to Palo Alto and never came back for him.
They continue to reside there. He has been there ever since.
He was raised by Christy Kroll and Tim Zakrajcik in their absence. Child abandonment isn't funny. But okay, so I'm thinking, what would I like to see from Vincent next year for him to really, in my heart, like earn his spot in the Olympics that he'll probably get because he's good at jumping and stuff?
I would like him to go on record, and this is an open door for him, he's welcome to come on our pod anytime. I would like him to go on record and say trans rights, and I don't shit how he skates after that.
Correct. Absolutely correct. 100%. And then I think in terms of programs, I want to see him move past this like cyberpunk moment that he's really involved in right now. I love Misha Gay and I love everything he does and we know this, but I would, for Vincent, maybe say like, let's leave behind the muse and the like dystopian fantasy.
Which is huge coming from us, known muse fans and also known fans of a dystopia.
Vincent makes me into a hypocrite because on everybody else, I'm like, do something cool and edgy and techno and like EDM and like, you know, do something modern and use your face and your actions and like act. And then with Vincent, I'm like, stop doing all of that.
Which goes to show that there is no one size fits all way to be a good, interesting, memorable figure skater. I just want something honest from him. I just want something that doesn't seem like someone told him this is what's gonna look good. And I don't know what that is, but I want it.
I know, and it's so hard because I believe him when he says that his big albatross around his neck or whatever is being number two to Nathan and being like second to Nathan Chen or whatever. I wouldn't ever call him that, but like I understand like he came in silver after Nathan's gold, and in a very practical scores sense and a technical sense, yeah. And that would obviously be difficult emotionally, but then I think, okay, if he's gonna skate that, it's still gonna be the same like furrowed brow, like
yeah. I don't have the answer.
So I don't know. I don't have the answer, but maybe somebody else does. And that's why they're paid to work with him and we're not.
Yeah. Also, I feel like once again, we are being way too generous to him with our kind analysis. I feel like we continue to be like, oh, but if he just gives us this one more thing, we're going to like turn it around and like really, really care for it. I'm waiting. And I'm hoping that I get one over. But as of right now, I'm like,
Sometimes he jumps and I'm like, that's a good jump.
I still think he has the best spread eagles, period. But it's just like, I don't care to see it because it's within the context of everything else. I'm being too mean, but it's my show.
Nah.
I don't know. Say trans rights, you coward, and we're going to move on.
If anybody says trans rights, we're like, you're the best skater on earth. And that's why we're not technical specialists and we're podcasters instead.
Correct.
But trans rights. So I can't say speaking of trans rights because that doesn't make sense. But I guess speaking of...
Speaking of other gold. People,
Nathan. Speaking of Nathan, Nathan.
Yeah, Nathan Chen came in first. And any other time, I would be like, unsurprisingly, LOL, wink, wink. However, he did give us a little bit of a scare this time, just to keep it spicy.
Yeah, just like at Skate America, he left a little bit of a window. And it's funny that everyone having a bad season because of the pandemic does extend to him, and yet still he's so far ahead that it barely matters.
Yeah. He had some trouble across the board. His short was perfect and great. He had some trouble in the free, and let me tell you, I was so scared because I had a bad feeling going into it. I was like, something's gonna go horribly wrong, and he's...
Me too.
I don't know why, but I was so convinced. And when he flubbed his LUTs, I was like, well, there it is. We are seeing what I knew was gonna happen. Something horrible is gonna happen. He's mm-hmm. not gonna win. Plot twist, he did, because the rest of it was perfect. But I was stressed out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he very much went on record after the competition and said that this short program for him is like kind of uncomfortable and far enough out of his comfort zone that he, you know, while he definitely thinks Shaylin did a great job choreographing it, it just like isn't his taste and he won't continue in that next year or like in that style. But it works so well for him. I think he's doing great. And it's just so interesting to me how, I mean, it's not surprising to me because I've experienced this as a performer and I've seen it on my peers and stuff a million times, but it really can be like sometimes stuff does not vibe within you and other people are like, oh my God, it was great. Like there can be that disconnect. I just think it's really interesting. I wouldn't have clocked it on this one.
Yeah, I appreciate that he's like, no, this is not it because I think this short program is perfect. I wouldn't say, like, if it were the Olympic season, I would be like, I don't know, I'm not sure. However, I personally pop off every time. But I get it. I know he had to take out some of the claps and the slaps, which is sad. But also, is this a crazy statement? Because he's also a good short program skater, but his frees are always so good. Like, there's never been a free where it's like, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I was just looking at his program's history on Wikipedia and thinking how he very much has a tendency to do up-tempo character piece for the short and then for the free to do something more sweeping, more, like, not entirely down-tempo, obviously, because, of course, we have the iconic Benny and the Jets.
Yeah, I was going to say the sweeping emotional stylings of Sir Elton John doing Benny and the Jets.
I would argue that the free tends to be something that is very cinematic yeah. and sweeping and builds and then culminates in something more modern. Like even within the Philip Glass, it's yeah. like an EDM remix that I'm fairly certain that Philip Glass himself did not do. But like whatever. I'm just...
No, but you're right though. With Woodkid and Rocketman and now the Philip Glass, there is very much that structure. And I think he works very well within that structure. He's one of those skaters that, like, really can win you over in the duration of a free skate and, like, take you from this, like, oh, emotion and, like, grandeur to, like, really popping off with him in the last 30 seconds. Like, there is always a moment of, like, you're completely on his side and it's like, yeah, I can see what we're, like, working with here.
From a technical standpoint, what I found really fascinating was how stacked these, the short and the free both were because... If you compare to last year, for example, I know that he had watered down his tech content a little bit because he didn't really need it. And also, like, both in the context of, you know, the field of nationals and what everyone else was doing. And also, like, you want to build to, like, later in the season competitions. Yeah. And because the structure of this season is so nuts, it's like he had more to prove and he really did want to ramp up a little bit. I say earlier in the season, but it's not. And that's the point. It's not early in the season anymore.
That's it. It's like world and that's it. It was high stakes. And I think we say that time and time again, like Nathan performs his best or his most exciting and most interesting when there's stakes. And sometimes that means performing flawlessly. And sometimes that does mean giving me a little bit of a scare on the Quad Lutz. So that after that, we could be like, oh, but this was, like, fought for. I think it's always more interesting when even in a field where someone's of Nathan's class, there is still the reminder that, like, someone's bad day could be someone else's good day.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I feel like I saw somewhere that, like, the short layout was, like, one of the hardest or the hardest in history in terms of, like, base value.
Yeah.
Do you remember seeing
yes,
that?
Yes,
and
yes.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. Because it's quad lutz, triple axel, and then the quad flip, triple toe in the second half. It adds up to, like, this is the wildest anyone's ever done a short.
Yeah, one of the most insane technical base values in the short. Total base value 97.23, which is, I mean, that's way higher than a lot of people get total score in a short.
Yeah, it's kind of insane, but it paid off, and it definitely gave him the cushion that his free needed when it, you know, was a little bit unhinged in the beginning there.
Absolutely. I think in terms of what I would like to see from him in the future, because I don't know why this is a running segment, but it is, of me thinking, what do we want to see next year? I think that just compared to the last few seasons, for me, these programs are not as memorable. They don't have as strong a character. And I think it would be fun to see him return to something that just pops a little more. Like, Jason's programs really pop, and they give him a chance to play. And obviously, Nathan and Jason have very different strengths, and, like, they'll be the first to say that. But I think, personally, that these were not the most memorable programs that Nathan's ever had.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I personally, I don't know why this is a segment. I think in the past couple of years, nothing has beaten the emotion I felt weeping to his Land of All Worlds. And I would like to feel that again. And I'm not saying that it's not happened since. I'm just like, oh, get Woodkid on board for the Olympics. Not necessarily for real, but like the essence of Woodkid.
Distill the essence of Woodkid and send it to China is what we're saying.
Yes.
Yes, God. I also want to say sort of specifically, like, I think the reason that I said, like, they will be the first to say that is because I think in the press conferences, somebody asked Jason, like, is it really hard to compete against Nathan Chen? Like, how do you feel about that? And Jason says something like, no, like, I'm so glad we're on the same team. It takes pressure off because, you know, we do different things and we can each focus on, like, what we do best. And I thought that was just such a gracious answer and so smart to not, I mean, gosh, not to throw Vincent under the bus, but, like, his whole thing being like, oh, I want to, like, he's always bringing Nathan into it. Yeah. And I thought that Jason's response by comparison was really cool to be like, we do different things and I'm happy to do what I do.
Wait, I don't want to go back to dunking on Vincent per se, but there was a bit where he was asked, like, something along those lines of, like, how do you feel competing, blah, 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 with the implication of how do you feel competing against Nathan, basically. And he said something along the lines of, like, I'm glad to have someone to compete against at this level in my country, which is an insane statement. Like, Nathan is many a time world champion. And to be like, well, yeah, you know, like, we have this local here who, like, can give me a run for my money is an insane thing to say.
I just... speaking of distilling things, can we distill Vincent Joe's confidence? I would love some of that.
Like, when I get my COVID vaccine, I would also like that just put into my body.
Yeah, can I get a booster of, like, that level of self-assuredness? Even the ability to fake it. Even if it's not real, even if he's just saying those things, I would love the ability to say those things. I could, those things would never leave my mouth. Yeah, but anyway, that was the senior men's podium. Shall we take a break before we go on to honorable mentions?
Yeah, let's take a break because I can't keep dunking.
All right, so welcome to the break.
Yes. Oh my God, welcome to break. What do we have to tell you? First of all, thank you so much for being here. We hope you're staying safe and taking care of yourself and your friends and family and people in your life. Secondly, if you'd like to take care of us, you can head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us 5 stars because they truly make me so happy in these trying times. And a nice review.
A nice review to boot would not hurt. Those really help us out because of algorithms and mysteries. And we also, if you are like, but wait, I've already done that, or that's too easy for me and I like a challenge, like what else can I do for you? We would say, oh my gosh, thank you so much. You know what you can do? You can go to www.patreon.com/icetpod and you can sign up to be one of our wonderful monthly patrons. We have a few different tiers. We have $1, $5, and $7 tiers. And for just $1, you can get a shout out and access to certain bonus episodes. And for $5, you can get all the bonus episodes and all the bonus content. We have over a year's worth of backlog of us being silly on a number of things, from extra figure skating commentary to stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with figure skating. So go check that out, and you help us keep the lights on in the metaphorical studio, and we love you for it.
Yes, correct. Also, by supporting us on Patreon, you also help us help other people out. We support causes and individuals who, you know, need the funds and need the support. So if you would like to also get involved with some good for the community, patreon.com/icetpod. Speaking of things that are not figure skating, Megan, the first episode of your show is out.
That is true. Yeah. If you want to hear me on another podcast doing something completely different, check out the Eclipse podcast. We're at Eclipse Pod on Twitter. We're a D&D podcast that takes place in space. It's kind of in the style of like if Star Trek was an audio drama and also a goofy D&D game. If you like space or you like RPGs or you just like me, definitely go check that out. The first episode is out. The cast of Eclipse also guested on another show called One Shot Onslaught, which is also in the same network, the Majestic Goose Network. They're wonderful people who do awesome TTRPG stuff that Netta and I have had the pleasure to work with. So if you want to check out that, that's dropping like within the next couple of weeks. So yeah, we've just gotten the opportunity to do a lot of cool gaming stuff and check it out.
Yeah, it's super fun. I enjoy your first episode very much and I look forward to the rest of it. And join me in becoming a fan of Eclipse.
Hell yeah.
Do you suffer from chronic storytelling dysfunction? Do you find you're overrun with trite tropes and cliche character patterns? Well, you're not alone.
In my old age, I was tired of boring stories, but thanks to Dice Chronicles, I feel young again!
If you suffer from a lack of creative world-building or one-dimensional character development, Dice Chronicles may be just what you need.
My characters always felt flat and unable to perform, but with Dice Chronicles, I'm not afraid of being my true self!
Before I started listening to Dice Chronicles, I felt so alone in my hunger. But now I'm a first-rate villain.
Dice Chronicles gave me a purpose. Most importantly, it gave me a terrible French accent.
Hi, I'm Yarn, and before Dice Chronicles, I used to be terrified of magic. But now, after just a few episodes, I've got magic pouring out of my eyeballs.
I used to suffer from crippling anxiety, but thanks to Dice Chronicles, now I only suffer from anxiety from going on an adventure with my friends.
Dice Chronicles is not responsible for rolling natural ones, TPKs, or the general feeling that our characters are better than yours. Ask your DM today if Dice Chronicles is right for you. Find us at podbean.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, honorable mentions. Boys edition.
Watch this take 5 hours. I don't know, maybe not. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, I want to shout out Maxim Naumov, who came in fifth, and last year he was the junior national champion. Correct. I think it's always very cool when you can rise up from juniors and then like really make a splash in seniors the following year, because otherwise it's a little sad.
Yeah.
To be such a small fish in a big pond, and we've all had that experience. So I'm happy he got to like, I don't know, show off and do a cool job. Looking forward to seeing more from him. He's got a lot of promise.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I want to shout out in sixth and also first in my heart forever and always was Jimmy Ma, who fucking showed up. I'm gonna do that again without banging on my desk. Who fucking showed up? I'm sorry. Look, I can bang on my desk if he can swear on live TV.
Jimmy Ma showed the fuck up. The thing with Jimmy that I love is that, and I find really relatable, aside from the foul mouth, is that you can really see the moment, like, on his face when he says in his head, like, get it together, Jimmy, and then it just clicks into place. Because I do that too. Like sometimes if I'm doing something and I'm not doing great, I just have to be like, get it together. And then I can do it. I can see that moment on him when it clicks into place and then he starts landing quads or really starts like, you know, eating up the choreo. And it's just, it was nice that in both programs, he really showed up.
I would like his Linkin Park program performed at my wedding and my retirement party and my funeral. And then every year for the rest of life on Earth, when my friends gather to remember me, I would like there to be an ice rink, and I would like Jimmy Ma in a purple hoodie to be there performing his Linkin Park program. Thank you.
You know those people who have surprise weddings where it's like, oh, we're just having a cookout, and then it's a surprise, it's a wedding? It would be like reverse for you, where you'd be like, come to my wedding, surprise, it's a Jimmy Ma ice show.
It's the recital. It's Jimmy Ma's recital. He does all of his hits. We do shots. We do Mi Gente. We just do all of the bangers. And also, it's my wedding.
And he gets ordained and marries you to your spouse as well.
On ice. The whole thing is on ice.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's extremely horrible. But yeah, Jimmy Ma, first of all, open invite to come on this pod and just hang out with us. I think Jimmy should have a microphone on him at all times.
At all times.
Just the running commentary is fucking gold. And I think we deserve just like a monthly or a weekly like drop in your podcast feed, which is just uncut whatever he has on his mind.
Yeah, what's Jimmy up to? What are you thinking about?
let us know, Jimmy.
If you're Jimmy Ma and you have thoughts, let us know. Let's move on. We need to talk about our two favorite little bros, Tomoki and Camden, who came in 7th and 8th.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about them as a unit because they had a pact to stress me out in the exact same way.
Yeah, it was nice. It's nice when bros
just are bros being bros
that way. Just bros being bros.
There's two bros, and that's why they both double their toe loops, because the two in bros is the two rotations on their toe loops. I don't know what I'm saying. They both doubled their planned toes at the top of their short programs, and it's stressed me out.
Yeah, but they both did a beautiful job, and it's, you know, look, it's a tight field, and if you're not totally on, you're not, you know, gonna crack the top six, and that's the tough thing about it. But I mean, I really enjoy watching both of them skate, and I really hope that next season is more consistent for them and better.
Yes, likewise. It's been a hard season for everyone, and I think it got to people to not be performing as or competing as much. However, I do think both of them did beautiful given the circumstance. I will also say that Camden's short program makes me extremely sad every time. It just touches me. It makes me feel very emotional.
Yeah. Love the free. It's a Josh Ferris Stefan collab. So of course it's amazing.
God-tier.
We get a beautiful sappy blouse. God tier. Like it's everything you want. So that's good. And hopefully, yeah.
I'm excited.
Next year, I have a feeling.
We'll see. Olympic year. I don't know why I keep bringing that up. I don't care about it any more than I care about other years. But, you know, there's this fun buzz about it, assuming things happen.
It becomes like a verbal tick if you're a person who is in any way sports journalism adjacent. You just start saying Olympics. It just like comes out of your mouth and you're like, where'd that come from? 'Tis the season. Finally, I think we want to shout out Alexei Krasnijan, who did not have a great time in the short, but came back really hard in the free. And as we see, you know, usually once per competition, there's someone that just doesn't do up to their usual standard in the short, ends up in a different warm-up group than you expected them to be for the free, and then has to really make a comeback.
My sweet son, Alex Krasnijan, had an upsettingly bad time in his short program. It was hard to watch. He was 16th out of 17 people. And you're right. I think we talked about it as it was happening when we watched the free, that there is this air. And that's not to say when there are 17 people there competing from the entire country, you've already won. But there is a feel to someone who's usually in one of the last groups skating his free basically first with something to prove. And I think it's a very exciting personal narrative because in Alex's case, he very much came through and performed much better. Still not perfect by any means, but much better in history. And I love seeing a man who's skating to prove something.
Yeah, and I think it fit the character because, like, Dracula had a lot to prove too. Right? It's been a minute since I've read it, by which I mean I've never read it, I've seen the movie. And it seems to me that Dracula had to prove that he was, what, the best vampire?
Yeah, that's the entire plot of Dracula, is there's a lot of, there is 16 other vampires, and one night they go blood drinking, and Dracula doesn't do so well. He doesn't manage to capture himself a blood source, and it's very embarrassing for him. So the next night he has to go out with the younger vampires earlier in the night, but he manages to, like, steal from a blood bank.
Yeah, like, I always thought Dracula had a very, like, sports anime arc to it. So that confirms my suspicions. No, but in all seriousness, you know, good for him for sticking it out and for coming back strong.
I will also say, as a closing, in closing, I will say I have never felt more represented or seen or understood in the history of figure skating than when Alex Krasnajan skated out to do his free with something to prove, very angsty, and just wearing black mesh.
That's how you live your life.
Correct. Very angsty, hoping to prove a point. Full titty out under a black mesh.
That's it. That's what it is to be alive. And that's about it. Obviously, everybody who skated was wonderful, but, you know, if we talked about all of them, we would just be the U.S. National Championships, and you can go watch that if you want to. We highly suggest you do if you haven't.
Yeah, I think it's still on Peacock and stuff, so we can just go, like, on demand that shit, and it's a good afternoon. You can sit around, watch the boys skate. And if you haven't seen them skate, but you listen to all of this, first of all, impressive. Secondly, a lot of this will be contextualized if you actually go watch them do it.
Yeah, crack open a cold one with the boys. And by a cold one, I mean an ice rink.
Oh my god.
Oh lord. Okay,
this
cool.
This is a wrap.
This is a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us on our U.S. Nationals coverage. It also, I feel like we did an oopsie and forgot our own birthday, but it was our second birthday recently, and we wanted to say happy birthday to ourselves and to all of you. Thank you so much for
sticking us around.
Holy shit. I can't even talk.
Time is not real. Thank you so much for being here with us for 2 fucking years. U.S. Nationals is what kind of started it all for us back in the before times, and it continues to be a ride.
It does, and hopefully, fingers crossed, next year we can be back there again. But either way, we love having you guys as listeners and chatting with you guys on Twitter, and you really, really wonderful audience. So thank you so much for listening. And if you want to follow us and hang out with us on social media, Netta, where can they find you?
Oh my god, this is so bizarre. They can find me at Netta Marie, that's NEDA, and then Marie, like any Marie. You can also find me at @N_ice_skating on Instagram if you want to watch me prepare for my first ever figure skating competition. And Megan, where are you on the internet?
On the internet, I am at MeganKelleher3 on Twitter and on Instagram. And if you want to hear me on a D&D show, you can go to @EclipsePod on Twitter or search the Eclipse Podcast, D&D podcast, wherever you find your podcasts. And if you want to support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/ICTpod, you could join the illustrious ranks of the following folks whose names I will now read aloud with my mouth into a microphone into your ears. And those people are Erin, Barbara, Nikki, Sally, Joseph, Susan, KM, In Spirit I'm Always Throwing Plushies Out of Genny Medvedeva, Jennifer, Heath, Jules, Danny, and Jordan. Thank you guys so much. You are the absolute best.
Thank you guys so much. And for the rest of you, if you want to chat with us, you can find us at IcedPod on Twitter and Instagram. We'll be around ready to talk. That's it. Stay safe.
That's it.
We'll see you soon.
Stay safe, everybody. We love you.
Bye. Bye.